satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio, Studio A, for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
Good day, wherever you are in this world. I hope you're having a great day here listening to Revolution Radio. Everybody asks for this. Revolution Radio. Where the information never sleeps.
It is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go, all suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char. And let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. We have been living through much unbelievable terror during 2020, including Antifa and Black Lives Matter conducting riots, looting, arson, even murder. I thought it might be a valuable and informative experience to invite a couple of guests on who actually lived through some of the worst in one of the most hard-hit cities in the United States, namely Portland, Oregon. My own son resides in Seattle. I have a brother there as well. Fortunately, I have contacts in Portland. We know many other cities were severely damaged. This all appears to be part of the reason why, if you take an accurate accounting of the election, Trump won an overwhelming victory by a margin of more than 50 million votes, which the Democrats conspired with the help of governors and secretaries of state in a fraudulent the use of Dominion voting machines to switch votes from Trump to Biden to eliminate Trump votes, and to, by virtue of Dominion having its own printer as a part, manufacture new ballots. We even have evidence that hundreds of thousands of ballots were obtained from China, which may actually turn out to be the owner of the Dominion voting machines, who wanted Biden over Trump because Biden is already severely compromised by his prior contacts with China, where the Hunter Biden laptop was concealed and its contents was concealed from the American people. because it shows a massive graft and corruption by the Biden crime family, including not only Hunter, his father, Joe, his brother, Jim, but where Tony Bobulinski, who is their business manager, went in Tucker Carlson and laid it all out in spades. And yet the Democrats would put up a candidate of this degree of corruption. Absolutely stunning. It turns out Antifa and Black Lives Matter are like the paramilitary wing of the Democratic Party, that they were doing their operations as what was intended to be a voter registration campaign, but combined with a slogan, defund the police, it hasn't really played out very well. In fact, we have a clip of the ersatz Joe Biden, the body double they've been using since the first debate, declaring that the Democratic Party must never use that defund the police slogan again because, he said, we were smoked across the country. Even Barack Obama has been castigating the Democrats for talking about defunding the police, which, of course, is contraindicated by their alleged massive victory. You wouldn't be criticizing the campaign for a slogan had it actually enjoyed a massive victory. Further confirmation, the whole thing was a scam. Now, I'm just delighted, therefore, to have two residents of Portland, Oregon with me here today, Tony and Craig, who will tell us about their experience in living through it all. I'm just appalled by their mayor and their actions, which appear to me to be a close proximity to what happened in Seattle. Tony, welcome to the show. Craig, welcome to the show. Tony, let's start with you.
Okay, thank you, Jim. Actually, I live just south of Portland on the border in Milwaukee, Oregon. I know you live in Oregon, Wisconsin, so we're kind of related there, I guess, a little bit, right?
Yeah.
And also, I was born in Pasadena, just like you, but 20 years later. And but most of my life, I've lived in Milwaukee and Portland, and I've seen the transition over since in the 1970s. Portland was kind of like a working class, blue collar people lived there. Medium income, and it transitioned over the years. I mean, back in the day, 1977, Portland won the Trailblazers won the championship, and that was the biggest thing that ever happened to our city. And then we had over the years, and I would say in the year 1990, we had a lot of it became more hip to move to Portland. I guess the reason is that people, younger people moved to Portland. They enjoyed the outdoors. We have the beach and the mountains, and it was relatively inexpensive, the rent and so on. And so we had a lot of younger people move in, and more progressive, liberal people, minded people. And they brought in the culture and gentrification of, especially Southeast Portland has a lot of neighborhoods like Hawthorne neighborhood, Belmont, and so on. And they brought in bought a lot of the restaurants and made them into nice restaurants. And there's a foodie culture in Portland where people enjoy going into the restaurants and food from all over the world, and also craft beer. And so it transitioned where more and more younger people moved in. And so I think that it's hard to find native people, actually, native Portland people like Craig and I living in Portland. And so that, I think that's the transition that happened. And then, so my experience, I got involved in the Portland 9/11 Truth Alliance group in 2006. And you were a big part of that. Listening to your radio, and I wanted to get involved. And there's a local celebrity named Mary Sterrett. She was a news anchor, and also she did Christian radio. And I invited her. She belonged to the Constitution Party, and she was basically talking about 9/11 being an inside job. And so I invited her to our group, and she spoke. she was going to come to speak to our group, and we had our meetings at a lefty bookshop. And the first experience with Antifa was with her. They boycotted her talk because she was a religious woman. She spoke out against abortion and so on. And that was the 2007, I would say, Portland. That's the year that Antifa was born in Portland, and I think we were one of the first people attacked, and I had no idea who Antifa was. And so that was the beginning of it. And after that, our group was attacked constantly from them. Let's see. Would you like to any questions?
Sure. Let me just add, I have a special connection to Portland because my son actually graduated from Reed. It was the only school in the country he, his mother, and I could agree upon. We thought Portland was fascinating. We thought Reed would be perfect because he's a bit idiosyncratic, and Reed is very tolerant of individuals with distinctive personalities, outlook, character. He's very creative. He did a lot of work in relation to theater. His thesis was a theatrical production with a commentary where I and one of my brothers, who was in the first class to graduate from Santa Cruz, who majored in psychology and literature, had both read the script and couldn't make heads or tails of it, couldn't tell if it was a comedy or a tragedy. My wife's older sister read it. Yeah, one of you may want to turn off the radio in the background, and said it was the most depressing thing she'd ever read. Well, when his mother and I, we had some years been divorced, came for the performance, we found it was an hilarious comedy, so that he knew exactly how it was going to play when it was presented on the stage, even though reading through the script, you could not tell. That really indicated to me he knew what he was doing. Now, Tony, I think you were living through an experience there. When did it become increasingly obvious that things were getting bad? When were, aggressive actions that were taken by Antifa, Black Lives Matter? I actually, in the intervening years, came to Portland with Scott Brennan on a college campus there, as Portland State, as I recall. And we did a symposium about Saudi Arabia and its involvement in 9/11 in the Middle East, and we were concerned, Scott being a former Army Intel and PSYOPs officer, that Antifa and Black Lives Matter were going to show up and we would be, obligated to deal with that. But they somehow decided to forfeit the occasion, even though they knew we were there.
Yeah,
I'm very interested in how it gradually grew upon you, Tony, and then I'll turn to Craig, that what was going on in Portland really wasn't in the best interest of the residents of the city, that the mayor appeared to have a political agenda, and that bad things were taking place.
Right. I guess, for our group, it was constant from 2000 on that we would try to bring in speakers. And we would always, they would contact the venues we were going to hold the talk, and Antifa would call the venue, and almost every time the venue would back down and, cancel the talks. We had, like, Lorraine Murray, you're familiar with her. They canceled that talk, and Gilad Osman also, I know you remember you spoke at that Denny's restaurant, that nice venue they had there.
Yes.
A few months later, we had Gilad was going to speak at Denny's, and they canceled that too. So it was a constant thing that the Antifa would, I would try to book speakers, and we'd always have to move to a different venue and keep them quiet. And so it was from 2007 on that I saw that in Portland, these venues would cancel, and there was a support almost for Black Lives Matter, but for Antifa, that they, I guess, it was more intimidated, not support. They were intimidated by them, and I was like, "Oh, this is crazy." And so it's not Ted. So that in that way, that was my first.
And Tim, just to round out the point you're making, they were canceling because Black Lives Matter was calling them and threatening them.
Right. At that time, it was Antifa, right? The Rose City. There's a group called Rose City Antifa. They were threatening them, saying, we're going to protest and, you know, the group. And they would say that they called us Nazis and fascists and so on. And most of the members of our group are very liberal minded. You know, I would say kind of old hippies, actually, you know. So it was kind of shocking to me that this was happening in Portland. I thought it was such a liberal, you know, open-minded city, and I would have hoped that venues would have maintained that spirit of openness, but they would always back down.
Tony, mm-hmm, let's bring in Craig for a few minutes, and we'll come back and forth between the two of you. Craig, tell us something about your experience.
Okay, a little background on me. I was born in Kansas, and I lived there for about 8 years altogether, but then spent most of the rest of my life in Portland. And Antifa started their chapter in Portland in 2007, and it was one of the first Antifa chapters in the United States. Now, in 2006, there was a big protest against the Iraq War in Portland, and in 2007 there was another protest, and both of those protests gathered about 4,000 people, and the protests seemed to be pretty across the board in terms of anti-war groups protesting the Iraq War. But at the end of the protest in 2007, in the evening, when most of the protesters had gone home, the Antifa continued the protest and led the police on a merry chase all over Portland. And that became a kind of template for further protests. In 2008, 2009, 2010, clear up to Ferguson, the Antifa were having anti-police brutality protests several times a year. And again, they would leave the police on a merry chase all over downtown Portland. They would set fire to dumpsters and turn over waste bins and occasionally break windows and do other vandalism to cars and various things. And so they were actually preparing for the events that would happen with Ferguson in 2014 and the emergence of Black Lives Matter. They were already practicing these kind of rioting techniques in 2008 and 9 and 10. So after Black Lives Matter emerged in 2014, they were really joined at the hip with Antifa. You seldom see them appearing separately, especially in protests and rallies. They show up together, and the membership is shared by, you know, many people who are in Antifa or in Black Lives Matter. The slogans and the methods of Black Lives Matter have a lot in common with the Antifa. And so it's actually not incorrect to speak of them as a unit.
Well, you know, so, in Charlottesville, George Soros was busing in Antifa and Black Lives Matter members in the same bus. I mean, I think you're correct. And I meant to add, by the way, that if one were to go to donate to Black Lives Matter, the money actually goes to Act Blue, which is a Democrat Party fundraising site, and wound up in the pockets of Beto O'Rourke and Elizabeth Warren and Amy Klobuchar and other of their ilk. I mean, it's all completely outrageous, but I think it's what we might expect when you have Tom Perez, who's a old-time radical from years back running the DNC. It's really outrageous. Craig, I want you to tell us, how was the community reacting to these developments as things got more and more serious? Was the community feeling something ought to be done, that corrective action should be made, that the mayor wasn't fulfilling her obligations to the community? What was the state of mind in the community as Antifa and Black Lives Matter took a more and more aggressive role within Portland?
Well, there is both opposition and support for Antifa and Black Lives Matter. And the support is sometimes not noticed until events happen that are should be prohibited but are actually allowed by the government. You know, the government has over the past 10 years become much more the local government in supportive of Antifa and Black Lives Matter and often caves to their issues. For example, there was an occupation recently during the past week of a house in Portland where an eviction was taking place, and which is a complicated affair, but Antifa, Black Lives Matter, had occupied that site, and including a few armed individuals. And it occupied several blocks, and this went on for a better part of a week. And finally, there was
It was an autonomous zone they created there.
Yes, exactly. And the apparently the Antifa group was able to gather enough money to actually pay the debt that was owed, and so it was settled that way. But it's interesting that. The city really allows this to take place. And another thing, just talking to people around town and looking at comments on news articles and that sort of thing, I see a lot of support for even some of the more extreme measures of Antifa and Black Lives Matter. For example, many statues have been taken down around the city of historic figures like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, Theodore Roosevelt, and others. And
even our elk. Right.
Yes, even the elk. Even the and the funny thing about the elk is that it wasn't put up there by the Elks Club. It was actually just an animal that. Somebody liked, and some rich man had paid to have that statue put there. And I don't know why it offended the Antifa, but they did take it down. And yet, I was talking with people about their reaction to the removal of one of the statues, and I was surprised by how much support people had. Just random people coming to the park would see the statue gone, and. I was there looking at it. I would explain it to them, and they approved of taking it down, many of them.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, you see the people in Portland support, as a rule, Antifa, Black Lives Matter. I have a friend that has a large business, and he is a Trump supporter, and he told me there's no way, Tim, I could put a Trump sign on my business because it would be vandalized. It would be destroyed. You know, so the people of Portland, I think there is a small minority that support, you know, more conservative views or values or just logic, you know, reasonable views, but they cannot express it outwardly with signs. You drive around Portland, it's all Black Lives Matter signs and, you know, very.
Tim, I mean, Tony, tell me. They're destroying business in Portland. I mean, they're destroying the downtown. They're committing all kinds of illegal acts. Why would any member of the community support that?
It's hard to understand. I don't understand it myself. In my town of Milwaukee, like I said, it's a smaller community, and we would not put up with it. I know the people in Milwaukee would not allow Antifa to come into the downtown area of Milwaukee and vandalize their shops and businesses. There would be resistance. And so, but even though it's just right next door, the culture is so different. Milwaukee is like, it's very, the demographics is a little different than Portland. Milwaukee's maybe a more blue-collar working people there. It's not like 97% white, which is crazy. Portland is like 77% white. But and Portland's the whitest big city in the United States, but it's like they support this craziness. I don't know why I think the businesses are intimidated by Antifa in Portland, that if they do speak up, they will be, there'll be consequences. There is one restaurant in Portland. It's a rib place, and the uncle is Snoop Dogg's uncle owns it. And he spoke out against Antifa, and he's been vandalized twice.
He's been what twice?
They vandalized. They came in and started fires in his business, his restaurant.
And why didn't the police respond and take them into custody, arrest them, these lawbreakers?
Yeah, there is a video. It looks like a woman who went in the restaurant and started a fire and. So they put the video out, of this woman, but I don't think they pursue it that strongly. There's a lawlessness now in Portland where, you drive down like the major freeways and they're going like 90 miles an hour. And because the police are just and graffiti, I see people openly spray graffiti on buildings out in the open, not at night. Just litter everywhere. Homelessness. People can pitch tents anywhere. So this sense of, it's almost a libertarian lawlessness. I can't say libertarian, but it's a lawlessness that's going on.
Anarchistic.
Yeah.
Don't the homeowners recognize their property values are just dropping like a rock? I mean,
the crazy thing is the property values are going up. So there are sections of Portland that still look nice. Of course, you have, residential areas that are maintained and look nice. But you get on the more of the neighborhoods of the small downtown areas of Portland, neighborhoods.
Tony, are you telling me people want to move to Portland more because it's lawless, because there's graffiti all over the place, because stores are being vandalized and set on fire? Portland more attractive.
No, there's people that my friends that live in Portland that are moving out or have moved out because they don't like it anymore.
Tony, hold on. We'll be right back. We'll be right back after the break. Tony and Greg from Portland,
listen,
Oregon.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Be evasive.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
And Genesis chapter 6, verse 4, and there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
That's right,
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11, available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a civil majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of
more... Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look. Just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that. What? Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution, Revolution. Radio! Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where I thought it might be illuminating to invite residents of one of the cities that have been massively assaulted by Antifa and Black Lives Matter, including looting, arson, graffiti, assaults, even murder, and fortunately had contacts in Portland, Oregon, as well as Seattle. And today I'm joined by Tony and Craig from Portland. Tony, you're making a few points. I was asking why the residents of Portland would put up with all this lawlessness. I'm still baffled to this day. Continue with your thoughts before the break.
Okay, yeah, the real estate, I just checked during the break, the real estate values from last year, home values went up 6.7% in Portland for homes, and they predict it'll go up 7.2% for next year. So it's kind of a mystery to me because the city looks terrible. I mean, it's heartbreaking, you know, when I was young, I enjoy going into Portland. People in Milwaukee looked up to Portland, you know, my town of Milwaukee, and it was like our big brother, and we were proud of our, you know, the neighbor to the north of us. And now it looks so bad, and it's heartbreaking. When I drive through Portland, it's almost like I have keep blinders on me because I don't want, it's heartbreaking to look. There's homeless camps and so on. So it's a mystery to me why the values, property values, haven't dropped, but are increasing. So that is a mystery to me. I don't know why. But okay, so like why the people of Portland, there's a support for Antifa, and I belong to a group called Patriot Prayer. Are you familiar with them, Jim?
Yeah. Go ahead.
So with Joey Gibson, belongs to Patriot Prayer. He's a founder of Patriot Prayer. It's a group that started just after Trump was elected, and they saw people were being assaulted and so on, and they thought it would be good to, protect, you know, people that are being assaulted at marches and so on. And they kind of, they did partner up with the Proud Boys, and I would go to these marches that would be with Proud Boys and Patriot Prayer together, and we would march around Portland with, American flags and so on, and we would just be assaulted by Antifa. You've probably seen videos of the brawls that happened in Portland between Antifa and the Proud Boys. I've been in those brawls. But the media would cover it that the Proud Boys and the Patriot Prayer, these groups are thugs and they're Nazis and so on. The people of Portland, they would demonize us. You could feel it when you're out walking on the streets that they would give you the finger and so on. So it's there's a, for some reason, if you carry American flag in downtown Portland or anywhere in Portland, you will be assaulted. So it's crazy.
Let me turn to Craig to offer his observations. Craig, how could this have been allowed to progress, you know, at stages, admittedly? But I'm just baffled why the citizens of Portland didn't speak up in opposition. And the role of the mayor here especially, which, of course, was also crucial in Seattle. Any thoughts you have, observations, experience, please share.
Well, you know, there are some curiously establishmentarian positions that the ANFA takes. The ANFA is very anti-9/11 truth. And from 2007 on, ANFA in Portland relentlessly attacked every member of our 9/11 truth group, calling us Nazis. And in fact, I've seen many times ANFA websites where writers or commentators said that 9/11 truth is a anti-Semitic and fascist position. ANFA, in spite of their sort of liberation philosophy on the surface, they're very pro-Israel. And also, you might think about the COVID-19 crackdown, lockdown, which has caused probably the greatest harm to small businesses and working people across the country. And in a sense, ANFA is doing their part to finish off the small-time worker and business owner.
Yes, 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 I agree. That's really the objective of the whole coronavirus, to wipe out the middle class. But I would think those who are being harmed would be protesting pretty loudly about it, and I don't get that impression in either Portland or Seattle.
Well, I don't think they connect the dots in the way I just did. And like I'd said before, there's a lot of support for ANFA, a lot of people who are philosophically aligned with them, although they may not necessarily approve of their violent tactics. I hear a lot of that. And, you know, frankly, I'm quite a leftist myself. I have a lot of opposition to the United States government. However, I also know ANFA it would be a terrible thing to replace the government with. ANFA is basically Stalinist in their tactics, and anyone who disagrees with them, even on minor points, is labeled a fascist and attacked.
Yes. That's all very good, but is it not well understood and by the residents of Portland what this is really all about? I'm still just baffled at what appears to be the passivity, the way in which the public in Portland, the residents of the city, the homeowners, the store owners and all that seem to have been complicit in acquiescing before this full-on assault on the community. I just find it outrageous.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure I know the full answer for that, but I do know that there's a great deal of support for the Black Lives Matter philosophy, and that support is very entrenched in the media and the ruling class. And I really think they're trying to pull us all in a direction of their choosing.
Yeah, I agree. It's the media, they'll demonize groups like Proud Boys and Patriot Prayer for small little things that Antifa, you know, I go to these marches and you read the news later. So the news will make it seem like Antifa are angelic almost in Portland, in a sense. And so I think that people buy into the media spin. And when I tell people I belong to Patriot Prayer, you know, I've lost friends because of it. It's like they think I'm some right-wing Nazi, where I'm a, you know, registered, you know, Democrat. I'm more on the liberal side of things. But so it's the I think it's the media spin and the people buy into, I guess. Wouldn't you say, Greg? I don't know.
Oh, I definitely. And, you know, unfortunately, possibly the majority of people in this country are slavish believers in the media and government spin. They just are led like sheep wherever the establishment wants them to go.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, was there an effort by shop owners and so forth to convince the mayor that the police should be cracking down on Antifa and Black Lives Matter and their outrageous actions? I mean, how did this all evolve?
Well, you know, the protests such as you're talking about do take place, and there are media articles about the damage that's being done to the shop owners and their plight. You know, these kind of articles come out fairly often, but it doesn't become somehow a cause majeure for the public or the government.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, Tony, you want to add more? I mean,
it is peculiar. I agree with you, Jim. I don't understand it myself, even though I live here. You know, why isn't there more resistance? You know, I don't know if you heard of the town Mossy Rock in Washington.
Go ahead.
You heard? Well, it's a town in Washington that's halfway between Portland and Seattle, and this is where the shop owners. It's not about Antifa, but about the COVID, where the governor Inslee in Washington is just as strict as our Governor Brown and shutting down restaurants and so on. So the mayor and the chief of police and the city council of this town of Mossy Rock, population 700, this nice little town, decided we're not going to obey the governor's dictates, and we'll, you know, they told the shops and restaurants and bars to open up, and they did. And so they have their own autonomous zone, which is interesting. They have the support of the chief of police and so on. And the group Patriot Prayer went up there and had a celebration a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, to open the place. And there was even though the town is small, 700, I would say there's over 1,000 people throughout the whole area of Washington, Oregon, came there to support them. So this is an example of a town that said, no, we're not going to put up with it. We're going to not obey the dictates from the governor. But people of Portland, the shop owners, I would think if I owned a shop in downtown Portland, which is hit the worst, I would try to get my fellow, you know, business owners together and, you know, demand action be taken. But they don't. So it's a mystery.
Did you get an impression of the attitude of the police about this?
So in Portland, the
yeah.
Police, it's okay. When I'm in the Portland police, when I'm in these marches, they kind of halfway try to separate the Patriot Prayer and the Antifa. Here's one example of what happened. This is last summer, the Aaron Danielson, the man that was killed. Remember, he was killed by an Antifa member at a march. There's his friends are going to have like this small memorial service for him in the area he was killed, and they brought their American flags and, you know, and so on. I got a text from Joy Gibson of Patriot Prayer. Hey, we need help. This group is being attacked by Antifa. When I showed up, there was one police officer at the intersection. And Antifa was on the other side of the street, and there was people that were supporting they're doing a memorial service. They were being separated by one police officer from the other side of the street. That officer left, and now there was no police around, and the police officer would have to know that this group is, you know, mostly women were in the group, is going to be attacked by Antifa, which what happened. And it's like the Antifa then proceeded to just throw things at us and be in our face, and we decided, okay, we'll retreat. But there's no retreat with Antifa. They just follow you. So for a half hour, we are being attacked by Antifa. You know, no police. The police knew we were being attacked, but they did nothing. And it wasn't until a couple people in pickup trucks showed up, and we jumped in their trucks, and then we left. And the Portland police did nothing to protect us. So I think they're told to keep hands off. You know, these interactions. You don't want to incite the Antifa. One other example is that with Andy Ngo, you're familiar with him. He was the reporter that he was attacked in Portland. On that day, I was in a group. It's kind of a patriot prayer group, and we had a permit to be in the Pioneer Square, the courtroom, outdoor area. And we are being harassed by Antifa, a couple of Antifa members. And I told the police, it's like, hey, we have a permit here. And the police just said, well, we were told not to interact because it might incite Antifa even more. So it's like, and later that day, then the Antifa came and, you know, a big mob of them and really physically attacked us. You know, so, and Andy Ngo got attacked that day too and injured quite severely with head injuries. So, well, and that day too.
Mm-hmm. That's just giving in to the bullies. I mean, for the police to say, no, it might antagonize them is just an excuse. It's giving them license to carry on with their illegal act.
Right. Exactly. You know,
so, I mean, I find that attitude by the police insulting and completely unprofessional and irresponsible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when Andy Ngo was attacked too, there were, you know, it was right, you know, I didn't see it happen right there, but I was there that day. What I understand is he was attacked and he didn't get help from the police for the longest time. And he was, you know, and it's just shocking sometimes, you know. They're afraid of Antifa. They're like a mob, you know. Back in the day, you know, you had the mobsters. You don't want to antagonize them. So, you know.
Well, I find it's just unbelievably embarrassing. I mean, this is a total collapse of law enforcement and civil society in a major American city. Just outrageous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And actually, with Ted Wheeler, the mayor of Portland, he's in a rock and a hard place. I know with what Craig was talking about, the house that was it was being foreclosed, and they did an autonomous zone there, right? Ted Wheeler actually wanted to be a little bit, you know, go in and, you know, break up this autonomous zone, but there was. They did bring in some police squad cars, and they, about four of them, and the Antifa just smashed the police windows, and, you know, so they had to retreat, and they are attacking the police officers. And you look at the videos, it's like young women and, you know, look like 90 pounds just going attacking these police officers.
You're saying most of those in Antifa who are doing the aggressive attacks were women?
Yeah, a lot of them, they put the women on the front lines because I know that the situation where they had the memorial service for Aaron Danielson, you know, it was the women that were on the front lines that were being aggressive, you know, and for how I don't want to hit a woman, right? So it's like then you're kind of like, and then they also have a man that he's there almost every Antifa march. He's in a wheelchair. He doesn't have. He's missing his. I guess he can't. He's paraplegic or whatever. But they put him. So they put the handicap. And there's another man that's like a little bit mentally retarded. I think he's an older middle-aged man. And they put them in the front line. So it's like, it looks bad if you, you know, you can't be aggressive towards them, right? And they make sure if the back they get mace or something, that takes the picture as, oh, they got this guy in a wheelchair got maced, right? So they generally, yeah, wouldn't you say, Craig, that the women are out in front? They're being aggressive.
Well, they're hiding behind dresses. This is an act of cowardice.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So. Yeah, it's a tactic they often use at their riots and protests. To put the women in front and often have the women do the provocative or aggressive acts. And then they do a little shuffle and the men come out and beat up the offender. You know, by the way, one of the things that we often hear about the Antifa in the media is that they're not organized, which is a complete falsity. And we know that they have leaders, they have many websites, each chapter has its own website, usually Olympia, Seattle, Portland, all have websites. And they have writers, there are people that are academics that write pro-Antifa propaganda. I have personally witnessed Antifa group in the park practicing for their maneuvers for riots. They all had shields and batons and they were in formation and they had their leader giving them instructions and people play acting, attacking them and how to tighten their ranks and how to disperse and all of these things. So Antifa is very definitely an organization.
Oh, yeah. Who made the absurd remark that it was just an idea? Was that Biden, the body double Biden? I mean, how ridiculous is that? Just an idea when they're maiming and, you know, looting and arson and all this. Ridiculous.
Well, yes, and it's a meme. It's an idea that the Antifa promotes very vigorously itself. And the Antifa's defenders will often say, well, you know, these are just a bunch of random anarchists who show up, although they don't explain how it is they know when to show up at the same time and same place, you know, which obviously is organization. But, you know, they just try to pass it off as being some nebulous, unorganized group. When we know that not to be true.
Right. And then they have a great name, Antifa, anti-fascist, right? I mean, how can you be against anti-fascist, right? So that's where, it's like when people hear about my struggle with the Antifa, they're like, well, Tim, are you a fascist? I'm talking, right? So it's crazy, you know?
Tim, are they really that shallow? They can't see that this group practicing fascist techniques and calling themselves anti-fascist, that's just propaganda and cover? Are the residents of Portland that naive, that gullible? I'm just dumbfounded.
Yeah, I think that there's a good percentage of them that are that naive. I think a good chunk of the people just watch the local news and the national news and read the Oregonian is very pro-Antifa. So they don't look deeper than that. And I know I had a discussion with a lady at my church I go to, and she was shocked that I belong to, you know, Patriot Prayer, and I'm in marches with Proud Boys, and she was like, oh, you know, that is just terrible, Tim, you know, Tony, you know.
Why was it terrible?
Because they have this idea that from the media that, you know, we are the fascist group, you know, so.
The propaganda and others have been highly
propaganda.
Effective. Craig,
right.
Further thoughts.
Yeah, even though they see, I think, Craig, didn't you say that, you know, you have people that they think that it's actually the Patriot Prayer that does the vandalism, or?
Yes. Yes, my sister, for example, who I see quite often, and we go for walks and talk about these subjects, and I've told her many times that the reality is that it's the Antifa Black Lives Matter group who are aggressive most of the time and starting trouble, and that the Patriot Prayer Group is only defending itself in almost every circumstance. But nevertheless, not too long ago, she said to me that one of her greatest fears was these right-wing militant groups that come to the protests.
Right-wing militant groups. But has she seen any right-wing militant groups looting and rioting and arson and assaulting people in Portland? Has she seen a right-wing group do that?
No, but she relies on the mainstream media as her main information source.
It's great having you guys here. I want to announce we're going to take calls this second hour. The number to call in, Mitchell will field your call, 540-352-4452. I repeat, 540-352-4452. We have Tony and Craig from Portland, Oregon, who've lived through it. They'd love to take your calls, answer your questions. Please do join us. I repeat once more, the number, 540-352-4452. Mitchell will field your call, standing by. Very glad to have you guys here. I think most of us find this whole situation just inexplicably perplexing, that how a community could allow itself to be taken over by vandals and looters and thugs and do nothing about it. And I think you're doing something to let us know about why that all happened as it did. Really, truly outrageous. We're now coming up to our break. I repeat, call in, talk about Portland, Seattle, the whole Antifa, Black Lives Matter movement and current politics. I'll have a fairly remarkable announcement to make when we resume after the break. I'm so glad to have you guys here. Stand by. We'll be right back.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Oh, no. Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
I've now received a second confirmation of a major development I want to share with everyone. Zero Hedge, for example, has just confirmed Pentagon abruptly halts Biden transition briefings, leaving officials stunned. Axios' Jonathan Swan reports a bombshell potential major disruption in a key part of the presidential transition before President-elect Joe Biden is sworn in on January 20th. The Pentagon has, without warning or explanation, halted Biden's intelligence transition briefings. Acting Defense Secretary Chris Miller ordered a Pentagon-wide halt to cooperation with the transition of President-elect Biden, shocking officials across the Defense Department, senior administration officials tell Axios. Biden's team has so far maintained it's unaware of the directive, while Pentagon officials are said to be stunned and in the dark. Administration officials left open the possibility cooperation would resume after a holiday pause. The officials were unsure what prompted Miller's action or whether President Trump approved. Miller's move, which stunned officials throughout the Pentagon, was the biggest eruption yet of animus and mistrust toward the Biden team from the top level of the Trump administration. However, at least one senior defense official downplayed the halt, calling it a simple delay of the last few scheduled meetings. But Jonathan Swan, in a follow-up tweet, noted this is all spin, saying there was nothing routine about this decision. Senior Trump officials have been furious at the Biden team, privately blaming them for leaks, and this decision was discussed last night with the White House. We'll see what comes of it. I believe there may be a bigger story in the background that major developments may be about to take place, and I'll address it at the conclusion of the program. Meanwhile, Tony and Craig, I'm very interested in the current attitudes of not only residents of Portland or of Milwaukee or of other suburbs around Portland, but throughout the state toward your mayor and toward the governor of your state, who seemed to me to have put their ideology and their political commitments to the Democratic Party and even to Antifa and Black Lives Matter ahead of their obligations to the residents and citizens of Portland and the state of Oregon. Please do, Tony, pick up there.
Okay, so for like last summer, the Proud Boys had a get-together in Portland, a national get-together, And they met, their meeting was going to be, it was at Delta Park, which is in an area outside quite a ways from downtown Portland. It's a large park. And the Governor Brown called a state of emergency because of this event, a national, you know, which was crazy. It's just a group of guys getting together. So she, you know, was outraged that the Proud Boys are going to be coming to Portland. And you know, the city is being destroyed, riots every night. And she could have called a state of emergency for that, but instead, kind of a get-together, a barbecue of the Proud Boys getting together at a park, she calls a state of emergency. And the people of Portland were out, you know, here's the culture of Portland. The people of Portland, you know, were outraged that Proud Boys are coming to Portland, you know. So it's the, you know, but outside of Portland, you know, in the rest of Oregon, eastern Oregon, you know, is very rural, you know. And they're more, they don't support Kate Brown at all, right? So it's almost a division of the state. And there's actually some counties voted to separate from Oregon and join Idaho. And we'll see how that goes, but because they don't want to be part of Oregon anymore with our governor. They want to join. And it actually would make more sense if they joined with Idaho, you know. I feel like I would want to move there myself if that happened. But,
well, Craig, pick up there, Craig. What are your thoughts about all of this?
Well, the Anifa BLM, if you go to the BLM's Wikipedia site, it says that major funding for BLM has come from the Soros Foundation, from the Ford Foundation, and from the Democratic Party. And we know that a lot of that money probably goes to the Antifa, too, because they're joined at the hip. There are a lot of people in Portland who have revolutionary attitudes toward the government. And the Antifa and BLM's actions appeal to that way of thinking. I think that a lot of the liberals and progressives, as they would call themselves in Portland, a lot of the Democrats who support Antifa don't realize just how violent and intolerant they are, and because that doesn't come out in the media.
Well, I'm really surprised. I'm really surprised. I mean, when you're right there living through it, not even the local newspapers. I got to admit, the Wisconsin State Journal, which is the most prominent paper here in the state, published in Madison. There is a Milwaukee major paper, too, has given nothing but propaganda about the election, about COVID, about the whole bit, as it were, the party line. I find it completely disgusting. So I wouldn't be surprised then if similar circumstances obtained in Portland with your news media, television, and the like. Do you have any conservative channels or spokesmen, even on the radio, that, you know, really are giving a more accurate portrait of what's actually going on, or are you just at the mercy of the mainstream?
We do have Lars Larson is probably the most popular. I think he's national too. Have you heard of him, Lars Larson? Syndicated, but he, I guess, in Portland, he's the most popular conservative. Or you know, he has a daily, a weekday show. So I don't know of any other. Do you know, Craig, any other conservative?
No, I really don't. I really don't listen to any mainstream outlets of any point on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, all our,
at least not directly.
All our newspapers and the local news, it's all spewing the, you know, the you know, propaganda, and so generally, yeah.
Well, how was the division? you know, the fact is that the whole vote thing was so fraudulent using Dominion machines. I don't know what kind of vote we got out of Oregon, but I was predicting that Trump could even take a 50-state sweep. And as near as I can tell, he actually legitimately won some 73 or more million votes. These are legitimate votes that the Democrat, Biden, received around 23 million, which just reflects the enormity of the fraud. They had to make up in excess of 50 million fake votes to overcome Trump's legitimate votes. And even California and Minnesota actually went to Trump, according to the research I've done, which looks quite solid and is substantiated by the use of these Dominion machines. Were they being used in Oregon too? Craig, you first.
I don't know because I didn't vote.
We have mail-in voting. We have mail-in voting. We've had it for over a decade now. So I don't know how they count the mail and the votes, though. You know, you have to you register to vote, and then you receive a ballot in the mail and you send it out. I know that there was a couple of years, about three years, I did not vote. And they keep track of if you don't vote, they don't send out a ballot. So I had to go back and re-register to vote. The accuracy of the voting, I think it may be good in Oregon. You know, I'm not positive, but we had the same system.
What was the recorded vote in Oregon, and did you guys think it sounded right to you?
I don't remember the exact percentage, but you know, in Oregon, you have, Portland's definitely, going to vote a high percentage for Biden. You mainly see Biden signs. I don't think I ever saw one Trump sign in the city of Portland. You go outside of Portland, you'll see Trump signs. You know, go to Milwaukee or Beaverton, Gresham, you know, the suburbs, you'll see Trump signs. So you have a large population of very, high Democrat population in Portland and in Eugene. And I think that those two areas will take the state. And that's why the rest of Oregon, especially eastern Oregon, very, very conservative, you know, ranchers and so on, their population is so low that they don't have an effect. That's why they want to leave Oregon, the state of Oregon, actually secede from Oregon, move to Idaho, you know. But I think if the elections may be fair, I don't know, totally buy into the mail-in voting thing, though, because, you could receive a ballot for your spouse and just fill it out, put a signature on and yourself and mail it in. There's nobody making sure that that's the person who actually voted, right? You know, I think people should actually go to the polling area and vote myself. But.
Yeah, well, that could change with online voting and iris recognition. That may be the future.
Well, that would certainly be one way of guaranteeing the identity of the voter, would it not? I mean, that's pretty good. That's not bad at all. Because I think that we do have to return to paper ballots and hand counts if we want to get reliable, restore integrity to voting, which seems to me to be absolutely indispensable given our ability to determine the governance of the nation is among our most important rights under the Constitution, even if some may choose not to exercise that right. Craig, I take it that's been your practice for some years.
I'm selective. Actually, I did vote on ballot measures, but I didn't vote for any candidates. I really have turned my back on that. Not that I wouldn't in some special circumstance, but I'm really of the opinion that the government is monolithic and that the two-party system is a sham and they're all controlled by the wealthy ruling elite. I don't want to participate in it, but just by voting, I think it gives your approval. Mm-hmm. Of a system that I don't approve of.
Uh-huh. Yes. Tony, your thoughts too? Probably similar to Craig's?
Well, You know, I did. I've been a Democrat my whole life. I was actually a precinct party person for, you know, 3 or 4 years. And this is the last election, 2016, is the first time I voted Republican. I voted for Trump. And, you know, I just see that I'm just so disappointed with the Democratic Party that it's just, it's moved not to supporting, you know, the working man, the farmers. It's more these, you know, side issues of gay rights and so on that you know, it's just like they lost their way, I feel. But one thing about the voting, I heard, I don't know if it was your show, another show, a long time ago, and it made a great, I thought it was a great idea, is have fifth graders count the votes. You know, you go to the elementary school or grade school where your children, if you had children, where they would go there and have the students run the elections, you know, with the teacher's help, and they count the votes, and you could have video cameras of the kids doing all the work, and so you could have, you know, and people could be proud of their children being part of the election, and that would get those children, in, you know, invested in, you know, and when they become older, in voting themselves. So, and
well, we kind of stole my idea.
Yeah, we have a caller from another Democrat-controlled state, namely Paul from California. Join the conversation, Paul, with Tony and Craig.
Yeah, well, I was laughing because I was wondering if they ever heard me on your show saying, you've heard me say this, Jim, about they should have sixth graders, you know, at least they're not going to be corrupt yet anyway.
Right. I guess I got it from your idea, and I thought it was great idea. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, no, I mean, I was totally serious about it, actually, because this whole idea that we need some complex, you know, computer software system to do, you know, essentially what is compiling, as Jim has said, N plus one. I mean, mm-hmm. it's ridiculous. Yeah. So,
right.
No, I just thought I would call in real quick. As Jim knows, I'm the, of his listening audience, I'm the leading Nazi racist. And,
I would not describe you that way, Paul. That's your self-designation. You mean how you portrayed by your enemies?
It's hard to get around it when I got the poster of Hitler on my wall and I got the SS lightning bolts tattooed. But yeah, you guys are basically telling me that if somebody like myself was just to walk down downtown Portland in a MAGA hat, that we would probably get in a fight. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It would be. I had on Facebook, I have a friend and, you know, very liberal. And I said, I'll pay your way to Portland, you know, stay at my home or a hotel. And, you know, I'll give you, but in return, I'll feed you and everything, nice restaurants. In return, you'll have spend 2 hours in downtown Portland waving American flag. And it's like, no, you wouldn't survive. And you would not. You would be beat up. For sure.
Just an American flag. What about if I had an American flag patch on my jacket? Would that do it?
If they saw it, they would. There was one, just a couple years ago, there was a man that was supportive of Antifa, and he was kind of clueless of the whole thing, and he went to the Antifa march, and he waved an American flag, and they beat him up, even though he was supportive of the cause. And
the police aren't going to do anything about it. Police are just going to stand by, let assault and battery take place, even a vicious beating in front of their very eyes, and do nothing about it.
I think that eventually they would break it up eventually, but
eventually. Yeah. We got two other callers. I want Paul to stay with us, of course. Stardust Man from the Revolution Radio chat room. Join us, Stardust Man.
Yeah, I got an idea I like to propose to everyone. What do you think about this? When it comes to counting the ballots, what do you think of having a video camera on the counting of the ballots so anyone in the United States who voted could watch the ballots being counted? Over.
Mm-hmm. Make the counting a public event. In other words, broadcast publicly.
I suppose. Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, look, what I think what we're all looking at, and if you really just think about it, and Jim has talked about this on his show before, but right now what's happening is so brazen and so preposterous. You know, it just defies the only conclusion you can draw is that they want us to know. You know, they want to rub our faces in it. I had the revelation the other day as I've been taking all this in and listening to Jim's shows, lots of other shows, reading, watching videos, that all of a sudden it just occurred to me that this may be just another larger operation of learned helplessness. And I'm thinking most people here are familiar with the concept of learned helplessness. And I think this is what's occurring, even if they don't really intend it to be so. And I believe they do intend it. But it's perfect for that, because what it's training us all to see is that it doesn't really matter. The agenda will move forward no matter what, no matter how egregious, how blatant, how ridiculous, how absurd, how preposterous. We all get to see. I mean, when you actually saw Joe Biden speak in the campaign, and we've all seen him since, the idea that millions upon millions upon millions of people would vote for this man is absurd on its face, in my opinion.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's ridiculous. They couldn't get 10 people to a rally. They're even now announcing they don't want people to come to the inauguration because they know no one's going to come to the inauguration. So they're making a preemptive strike.
Well, you know, this is Craig speaking. There are a number of independent journalists, the most prominent of whom is Whitney Webb, who lives in Chile. She's an American expat, and she has a website called Unlimited Hangout, and she also writes for Last American Vagabond. Anyway, what she and a lot of others are saying is that in the past couple of years, there have been several government planning sessions for drills, and they actually had drills for the exact scenario that's working out now. There was going to be a plandemic or a pandemic, and there was going to be a contested election, which results in civil disorder and military intervention. And these things were talked about in meetings. There's films and videos of these meetings, and it's something everybody should know about.
Yeah, who is having those meetings again, Craig?
U.S. government officials with health officials in the United States.
U.S. government. You don't mean
if you look up Whitney Webb, some of her more recent articles deal directly with these issues.
Well, we have a favorable impression of Whitney Webb, that's for sure. We have another caller here standing by. Daryl, join the conversation, please.
Now, Daryl Stardust, man, I'm the same person.
Oh, Daryl. Okay, go ahead. Yeah, add a further thought to Craig and so forth.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you know, I just kind of wonder if both sides are, you know, trying to keep the truth coming out, because, you know, it's so simple just to do a simple thing like, you know, a video broadcast of the counting of the votes, and really neither side has even brought that idea out, really. Over.
Well, you're talking about paper ballots and hand counts, right? That would be the key.
No, I'm talking about a video camera videoing the actual count of the ballots being broadcast on live video.
We did see
that. Daryl, the point I'm making is the actual count they would be broadcasting is a hand count of paper ballots, right?
Yes, but video televised to the world.
I got it. The point was they were broadcasting. Paul, go ahead.
Well, okay, but yeah, I mean, there's already video or footage of a lot of this, but here's the problem with that is, okay, what gets broadcast to who? I mean, how many cities, how many towns, how many counties? I mean, it's unbelievable, right? Some of these states have, I mean, untold amounts of counties. So what is it? Who is it? Where is it you're going to broadcast? Just the idea that, you know, the system is essentially controlled by those who have, how should we say, a vested interest in its outcome. I mean, I think that's the main issue that we're looking at. And, you know, the point that I found interesting, by the way, in the first hour of the discussion was, I forget which one of you said it, that Antifa, interestingly enough, is supportive of Israel and does not like 9/11 truth. I had to crack up at that one.
Yes, it's,
that was me. That was me, Craig.
Yeah, okay, Craig. Yeah, that's a big fat kosher bagel I smell there.
I mean, Israel, that 9/11 was to benefit Israel, carried out by the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense and the Mossad, right, Craig? So we see, you know, that suggests Antifa is an instrument of Israel, which, of course, controls the mainstream media, which, of course, suggests in turn that they're major players here, maybe as major a player as China. Your thoughts, Craig?
Well, yes. You know, three of the major national writers who are propagandists for Antifa are members of the tribe. And here in Portland, we've seen a lot of that membership in Antifa.
Right. Allison Weir, are you familiar with her? If America's New? Are you familiar with Allison Weir? That she speaks on the Israeli-Palestinian issue, and she came to Portland, and when she was in Portland, it just happened that Antifa had like a kind of a get-together at Portland State University, and so it was kind of open to the public, and then she attended, and they recognized her, which is, so they knew who she was, and they went after her saying, hey, you talked about blood libel, and that's a conspiracy theory, and they removed her from the venue. So definitely, right. they knew who she was, which is crazy, you know. So definitely, it's a Jewish Israeli organization, Antifa, from
of
what
course.
I've seen in Portland and what I've dealt with. Here.
And I probably don't have to tell you guys, Craig and the other guest, I forget his name.
Tony.
Hold your thought. We'll be right back after this break.
All right.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Did you ever feel that things were not quite right? That everything was just ever so slightly askew?
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
and we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Paul, you had some things you wanted to say just before we went to the break. Pick it up.
Well, I mean, just regarding all the, you know, the so-called purpose of Antifa and the results of all the protests and the rioting. I mean, it's pretty obvious that it's just all about destruction and disharmony and, you know, disunity and essentially just accomplishing nothing, really, when you get right down to it. And, you know, of course, that's what these people behind it, that's what they're about. Because historically, you know, they feel somehow, this is the mental defect that's been debated about these people for a very long time, is so many things that they do that they think are in their interest are, of course, contrary to their interests when people find out they're doing it or they're behind it. I mean, I just happened to be bumping from one site to another, and I clicked on a link because it was a letter written by a Roman governor of Egypt in 41 AD. And he used the term riot, you know, and talking about Jews, and he was actually going to ban Jews from coming into the city. And this is like 2,000 years ago. So, you know, not a lot has changed. You know, human nature, it's hard to change that. I mean, biology is something that's real, and these people want to try to lie to us and tell us it's not. And, you know, part of me to use a racially provocative word, but what they're really trying to do is turn these people into niggers. I mean, it's basically just like nigger behavior, what you're witnessing, because decent, productive, moral, you know, people that have jobs of all races, but I'll just say, you know, white people are not going to engage in this sort of pointless behavior. And a lot of these Antifa types that are protesting so-called fascism, what they really are thinking means government, they've never had really to deal with the government. Maybe they've had a traffic ticket, or maybe they got like some minor drug bust, but most of them, they've never really had a beef of any significance with the so-called government. Meanwhile, you know, older adult, middle-aged, you know, white business owners, and business owners of any race, get screwed over every single year after year after year, paying all the taxes and the permits and the fees and all the stuff that they have to do to make society enjoyable. What do these Antifa types do to make society enjoyable? Are they going to the park and trimming the hedges and picking up litter? No, they're just worthless scum, and I just really wish it would be open season, because I would love to go up there and kick some ass. A friend of mine actually wanted to go up last year. He wanted to drive up to Portland and engage, but he ultimately decided against it because he's already got one felony. But believe me, he would have done some damage. Just like that's the thing about the way they promote or shall we say try to regulate these riots, keeping these sides apart. It's a smart thing, because if they were not to keep the sides apart, one side would clearly clean up the other. And that's what I think a lot of people want to see.
Yeah, this is Tony. That's true. But if you come to Portland and you engage and you actually do, you beat up an Antifa member, they will, there will be prosecution against you legally. Mike Schmidt is the district attorney, and he releases Antifa as soon as they are in jail. He just releases them the next day. But if you're on the with Patriot Prayer or the Proud Boys, he takes a book at you. So that's the problem.
That's really disgusting. How do the people of Portland feel about that?
Well, the people of Portland, generally, they demonize Patriot Prayer. They're clueless about the organization. They think it's a white supremacist group. But Joey Gibson, he's half Japanese, half white. The another member, Tiny, he's no longer, he's Polynesian. And many of the members are diverse, but they're put out that, they're demonized as Nazi white supremacists, and the people believe it. And then they approve of Mike Schmidt's, throwing the book at these people. So,
I've had an exaggerated impression of the intelligence of Portland residents. Tony, I got to admit, a lot of this is so obviously inequitable, unjust, illegal, inappropriate. I would have thought the community would be outraged at the behavior of their own police and district attorney and mayor, and it doesn't appear that that's the case at all.
That's not the case. Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
And coming to a town near you, too, because they've done it here. The guy now in L.A. that was here in San Francisco, and he's already given a press conference and talked about he's going to eliminate cash bail. He's going to not prosecute what they call low-level offenses. This is all part and parcel of essentially deconstructing the social order, making society unpleasant, because this is what these people do. And again, I go back to this whatever mental malfunction they have that somehow they think that serves their interests or serves their purposes, when all it really has done throughout history is make people hate them and make people want to kill them, and in many cases make people kill them good reason.
Let me bring Daryl back into the conversation. Daryl, your thoughts?
I'd just like to clarify some for all those people out there in radio land that the definition of nigger is not knowledgeable about the fact, and give you a very quick example of me being a nigger at one time is I ate the center of a pineapple, and I did not know that that thing would make my mouth bloody, and I was ignorant of the fact. Over.
That's interesting.
You mean you ate a pineapple, the external covering of a pineapple?
No, the center of a pineapple. Do not eat the center of a pineapple, because you might as well chew on a fiberglass broomstick.
Okay. You learn a lot of stuff on this show.
Tony, go ahead and give us further thoughts about, Portland. I'm just baffled. I would have thought, the residents would be concerned about the welfare of their city and its future in the face of this massive assault. And I get the impression that's just not the case.
Yeah, again, it's a mystery to me, too, the people of Portland. Generally, they've been misinformed, right? And I think that many of the demographics of Portland has changed. You had in the 70s, the people of Portland would not put up with it. But you, again, most of the people that live in Portland today are not from Portland. They've moved in. They're younger. They're hipster types, you know, and very or
stupider.
And on the west side of Portland, they really haven't got the you know, besides downtown Portland, the effects of the Antifa. The Antifa stays on the east side and the downtown area or north Portland. The west side, they're, you know, people have more money and very liberal. They're more yuppies, and you got the hipsters in the east side, and they're just uninformed, I guess. And so
very, most people in general, and they're probably the same, have a fairly low level of sophistication. I mean, you have to take more than the single step. You know, you can't just read a paper or listen to a radio program or, you know, a television special. I mean, there's, as Jim knows, having done the research he's done, but once you take a few steps, you know, you venture down any number of rabbit holes. You don't have to go that far to see the writing on the wall, but a lot of these people do not. And speaking of this this DA there, I think you said his name was
Mike Schmidt.
Refresh my memory. Yeah, okay.
Mike Schmidt.
I would imagine, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he falls under the category of one of these many races that was supported by George Soros Foundation. There was a great article a few months ago, and it's been reprinted or reposted on Winter Watch, and it was about the what he called the race to the bottom, where the Soros Foundations have funded these DA races, which typically don't tend to be that well funded. So what they do is they'll pick a candidate and they'll provide him with the lion's share of money to see that he gets elected, and of course the agenda is what you're seeing in all these major cities, which is more crime, more unrest, more strife, a deconstructing of the social order, because that's what they want to do to this country. You know,
social, well, you know, cultural market. Yeah. Yeah. In Berkeley, during the riots there a couple of years ago, they were led by a group called By Any Means Necessary. It happens that By Any Means Necessary was founded in, I think, 1995 in Berkeley by school teachers. And the leader of the protests in Berkeley in, a couple of years ago was a school teacher. The bike lock attacker was a college professor. In junior grade. But anyway, in Portland, since 2016, the Portland Association of School Teachers has hosted a Black Lives Matter week in the public schools. And they weren't able to hold it this year because of COVID-19, but it's a week-long teach-in on BLM, you know, that is in the public schools, hosted by the school teachers. You've got this very large block of school teachers in Portland who are totally behind BLM and Antifa.
And why is that? Why are they behind BLM and Antifa? Why? I don't get it.
Because they're mostly women, Jim. Okay, women are extremely susceptible and gullible to this kind of crap. I'm sorry. I'm just speaking the truth here. You know, most school teachers are women. So that's why. And because they feel sorry for people. And in many cases, they don't haven't had the experience. It's just like the people that are protesting, you know, this white nationalism and white supremacism and Nazi and all that. None of these people, I bet you right now, close to zero, has ever had anything bad done to them by like a white supremacist. Okay? It just hasn't occurred. It's a phantom. Right? And the whole thing about Black Lives Matter, anybody who's really dealt with like low-class criminal blacks, or seeing what some blacks can do to a neighborhood once they start moving in large numbers, they're not going to be behind BLM. A lot of blacks don't like BLM because they know what blacks are like. Like I said, I've said on this show before, I've had black friends tell me that the average white person doesn't have any idea what low-class, ghetto criminal blacks are really like. Okay, so to feel sorry for them or to think they're getting a raw deal in society is just stupid. Because meanwhile, you've seen people come here from poor countries with nothing, like the Vietnamese and you know, Laotians and all sorts of people from different parts of the world. And they just keep their mouth shut and they get jobs and they save their money and they study in school and they do fine. You know, what's the problem with blacks? Right? I mean, they get all the affirmative action programs, they get government subsidies, they get all this stuff that's to help them. So what's their deal? And even African blacks, you can hear them online. I've read them. I'm almost done here. But yeah, you can see posts by blacks from Africa that come here, and they'll talk about, hey, what's going on with these American blacks? Why are they so angry? You know, this is a great country. And I met one in person. It's not a lot, small sample size, but I met one in person that had the same attitude. He was like a happy, hardworking, successful guy from Africa, not from America. And he chuckled. He just didn't understand what the deal here was with American blacks. And of course, I wasn't sophisticated enough at the time to tell him that they've been the victim of Jew brainwashing forever. Go ahead.
I think the police brutality toward blacks issue is being promoted by Black Lives Matter and Antifa and other groups. In the same way that the COVID-19 lockdown is an overreaction to a virus that might be real but is nowhere near as dangerous as they're portraying it. And it's very odd that this revolutionary group, Antifa, and their stepsister, BLM, are going after this issue of black rights when there's an entire, you know, working and poor class of Americans of all races who are suffering a lot of the same problems. And, you know, I really think that focus on the black issue is meant to take the focus off the issue of poverty in America.
That's a good point.
Yes. And other issues.
Well, the latest studies I've shown suggest that America is actually the least racist society on Earth. I think UK is pretty much there. That's a massively multiracial country. London may be the most sophisticated multiracial city in the world, but the idea that racism is a major issue here in the United States, I think, is completely ridiculous. I mean, our most admired figures and celebrities, sports figures, actors, actresses, singers, entertainers, a large percentage are black, and among the most highly paid and coddled in American society. We have all kinds of officials in government who are black. We not only elected a black president, but we reelected him. I really felt that was the end of the issue, but it's clear that they have tried to reignite or aggravate, you know, racial tensions that really were a relic of the past, and that's been part and parcel of taking down statues that were supposed to represent reconciliation between the North and the South. I mean, these statues of the Civil War Southern generals, for example, was a gesture of appreciation to suggest they weren't, in fact, traitors. They were simply representing conflicting interests of Americans who thought that they were entitled to a different type of life than other Americans. The whole thing is just, in my opinion, completely outrageous. And the idea that Black Lives Matter, you know, we have to separate the slogan from the reality. Of course, Black Lives Matter, but the slogan is just a monstrous element of a propaganda campaign that has no warrant or justification. It's trading on an elementary fallacy of equivocation, where you got a phrase that has more than one meaning, because the Black Lives activists are thugs and bullies and fascists and in monsters, and they're not good people, whereas black lives generally, black people, at least in my experience, are just as good an American as most Americans. In fact, it's when you get deeper into black society, it's like they have the kinds of values that were conventional in America in the 1950s and the 1960s. They don't approve. Most blacks don't approve of Black Lives Matter. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, that's, yeah, there's a lot of stuff there I would take issue with. I don't want to break it down completely, but the reason that they're doing this, just like the reason they do so many things, it's an inversion, okay? So in other words, the reason that they're trying to push homosexuals and lesbians and, a lot of blacks into government, make them police chiefs, make them mayors, make them governors, make them DAs, is they know that this is exactly, you know, this is a way of slapping us in the face. Okay, you can say what you want about blacks, and, you know, I've said many things, and so have you, but when they try to ram into our faces telling us that Black Lives Matter, they really don't believe that themselves. I'm talking about the Jews who are behind this, right? They do not believe that themselves, and they know that we don't want to hear it, and we mostly don't believe it either. Okay, so this is they're using it as a weapon. You know, that's the side issue to it.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
So here in Portland, 6% of the population is black, and they used to belong. Historic Oregon was a racist state. You were not allowed to live in Oregon if you were black, and they there was only like 1,000 blacks. Back in, you know, the turn of the century. And then during World War II, we needed labor, and then so many blacks came to Portland. And they lived in a place called Vanport, and that was flooded in the 40s. And then they moved to an area, Albina, North Portland, and that they were kind of segregated into that area. So there was racism back in the day. And then what happened, Albina became, it's close to downtown Portland, it became gentrified, and they were then they moved way back far away from the east side of Portland, and it's called the Numbers, if you go past 82nd, it's called the Numbers. So they were dispersed into the poor white community, so that's where most of the blacks live now, in the poor white areas. So it's interesting that right. When they had their own community in the 50s, there was a stable community. And because they had their own culture, but in the 80s, early 80s, they became, you know, they had the introduction of drugs and so on, and it became more of a slum area.
Exactly.
But
deliberate.
But when you read articles, they keep on saying, "Well, Oregon has this past of racism," and they keep on pushing that, thinking that we are still. Maybe still racist because we had that past back in the day. But so many people from Portland are not from Portland, and they are very liberal-minded. They're not racist. And the people that are pushing Black Lives Matter in Portland are not black. They're white. So it's insane.
And having said all of that, and I agree with a lot of it, and I will put it this way, I don't disagree with a lot of it. But here's the other reality that we all need to face and be honest with each other on this show, and I think in the conversation nationally that we need to have, is you don't want Portland to become 30% black, okay? Just like you look at what's happened to places like Detroit and Baltimore and so on, it's not a recipe for success, okay? So there is, there's no doubt the past is the past, but there are still things in today's world that are realities and that have to be dealt with. And the bottom line is a stable, you know, successful area is not going to be benefited by bringing in, lower achieving and in many cases criminal prone elements. And this, by the way, is well known to be biological. There's just no getting around it. So if that's an honest conversation, then, you know, see, this is a problem that you have with the mainstream media, and what they promote is they just always want to tell you it's skin color. It's just the amount of melanin in your skin, which of course is absurd and ridiculous. So there is something to be said for separate communities, and many many people on both sides feel that's a better fit.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Anyway.
May I?
Just real quickly, some friends of mine live in Bend, Oregon, and they were talking. He was telling me about one of the major supermarket chains there. His sister was a cashier. And they wanted everybody to wear a BLM pin, a Black Lives Matter pin, on their uniform. And, you know, she was pissed. She didn't want to do it. And I remember asking my friend, I said, well, how many blacks are in Bend, Oregon anyway? He goes, I don't know, maybe three. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing worse, in my opinion, than making white people grovel to blacks about something that in many cases they had nothing to do with. And the average person that I've known, just like myself, I'm friendly and decent and polite to pretty much everybody I meet. I'm not going to do
Darryl,
you any wrong.
I think Darryl wanted a word in edgewise. Darryl.
Sure.
Yeah, I'd like to say something about that particular situation. I live here in Harrison, Arkansas, and it had a reputation from many, many, many years ago of running the blacks out of town, you know, or hanging them. And when I moved into this town back in 2001, the sign alongside the road, you know, for the litter pickup, you know, the litter is picked up by this organization. It was picked up by the KKK. Oh, that disappeared years ago, and this community has changed a lot since then. And so, but the history still sticks with you. Even though you change, that history still sticks with you. And you go to Google, and you do any search engine you want, and you look up, and Harrison, Arkansas will come up as the most racist town in the country. And so sometimes you try to shake that off, and it has changed. But history, it follows you. Over.
Okay, good, good, good. We're almost to the end. Tony, Craig, maybe a final thought from each of you, and then I want to just mention what I take to be this Pentagon abrupt termination of the transition process with Biden. Tony?
Yeah, I think that Portland, I hope it doesn't become a model for the rest of the nation. I don't think it will, but I pray it will not. It's sad to see a destruction of a beautiful town.
Craig, your final thoughts?
The Antifa needs to realize that real communists support the entire working class, not just one race.
Well, I thank you both for coming on. You are simply excellent, and it helped us to gain some understanding of what happened in your community, which we've all admired in the past, but been completely perplexed by the events that have transpired there, as in Seattle, as in Minneapolis and other communities. My final thought here about the Pentagon termination of the transition with Biden, this may be...
Revolution.